intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyar. I believe we were the first radio broadcast in the world to air a complete COVID program interviewing a molecular biologist. That was back on January 29th, 2020. Many people hadn't even heard yet of the coronavirus. And that was with molecular biologist Kevin Anderson, director of the Van Andel Research Center in Arizona. Kevin is one of the history-making scientists who has published in prestigious scientific journals discoveries of biomaterial fossils on SARS-CoV-2. Kevin pointed out in that interview that the coronavirus would mutate, of course. And a year later, we now have what? The China virus has a UK, a South Africa, and a Brazilian strain causing concern. And what an honor to welcome back an RSR audience favorite, Dr. Kevin Anderson. Hello, Kevin.
Well, hello. It's always a pleasure, Bob.
Oh, thank you so much. If I recall, we did speak about this being an RNA virus and not a DNA virus. And because it speaks of the brilliance and glory of God as creator, Kevin, can we take a moment to start at the very beginning there with a thumbnail description of DNA and then RNA?
Well, DNA would be like what you have in your chromosomes in your cells. In fact, all cells have DNA and RNA. DNA is kind of like your hard drive on your computer. It stores the genetic information. And then the cell will take and make a copy of that, but it'll be in an RNA language. So RNA is chemically similar to DNA, but not exactly the same. RNA is kind of like your RAM memory, where you're pulling up stuff off the hard drive to put it temporarily into memory. But the RAM memory in your computer, of course, is very short-lived, just like RNA molecules are very short-lived.
Yeah, right. So I might have a computer program like Microsoft Word, I do, on my hard drive, even though I use a MacBook Pro. And so that's pretty stable, like our DNA in the nucleus of our cells.
Right.
But then some of that information will be copied into the electronic memory of the RAM, and that's much more fleeting. It comes and goes as needed.
And correct.
You're saying
correct.
That's a good analogy for the RNA.
Yes, RNA is the same way. The cell makes it as needed, gets rid of it when it's done with it. So it's very short life. And then the cell uses that RNA to control processes in the DNA and also to make protein.
Okay.
Then you have DNA viruses. DNA viruses really kind of the same thing. They invade the cell with their DNA. They get your cell to make an RNA copy of their DNA and then use that RNA to make viral protein. RNA viruses don't use DNA. They just infect your cell with RNA and skip the DNA.
Okay.
And so, like, the COVID virus is an RNA virus. So its nucleus, its genetic information is strictly just RNA. And so when it invades your cell, it puts the viral RNA into your cell. That viral RNA then kind of hijacks your cell and uses your cell to make the viral proteins to make little baby viruses that then spread to other cells. So that's kind of the difference is RNA viruses like the SARS-CoV-2 don't use DNA at all. They're strictly RNA.
So, Kevin, the human cell at church Sunday morning, Denver Bible Church, we put up on the front screen an image. It was just a tiny slice of a human cell, and it was the most stunning thing imaginable to see. And it was all real parts, real imaging of a real cell. And there was so much in it. We only talked about the kinesin protein, the microtubules, and the mitochondria and the mitochondrial DNA. But that cell, even though we have maybe 10 trillion cells in a human body. And those cells are so tiny, but it's like an entire city inside the cell with the transport railroad system and everything. And you're saying that a bacteria and a virus, they actually invade the cell. They go into cells in your body.
Yes, some bacteria can, but don't confuse bacteria and viruses. They're very, very different. Yes.
Yes.
Bacteria is actually a cellular system. Viruses are just strictly a replicative entity. They are just a protein and a piece of nucleic acid.
Okay.
And they're looking to invade cells because they don't have ability to replicate themselves. So they got to invade the cell to use your cell to replicate themselves.
Okay. And a virus is much smaller than a bacteria.
Virus is much smaller. Yes.
Right.
But,
okay.
And bacteria have their own viruses. We call them phage.
Okay.
So any cell has a potential virus that will attack it.
Okay. So since the COVID thing, it's based on an RNA virus epidemic.
Yes.
What is then an RNA vaccine? What does that mean, an RNA vaccine?
That's been where there's been some confusion, because an RNA vaccine has nothing to do with it being an RNA virus. They're not related. There's never been an RNA vaccine made before. People have kind of mistaken that, well, we've never isolated an RNA virus before, something like that. They've gotten themselves confused. That's apples and oranges. The RNA vaccine could also be made against bacteria. It could be made against other parasites. So the actual technique of using an RNA vaccine has nothing to do with it being an RNA virus.
Okay. And we're going to talk in a bit about the ethics, the morality of the current batch of vaccines and their use of fetal tissue, which is so terribly concerning. So maybe we could hit on this a little bit more, though. So an RNA vaccine, words, they concern people because we're not familiar with them. We know there's wild molecular machinery going on in us. And so here's an RNA vaccine. You gave us a first shot. Could we talk a little bit more about it?
Well, let's back up for just a second and make sure I understand the purpose of a vaccine in general. The purpose of vaccine in general is to introduce a substance into your body that your immune system thinks is the pathogen and will respond as if it's the pathogen, but it's not really the pathogen. In other words, to make you immune to the disease without actually getting the disease. And obviously in history, vaccines have been very effective. That's why we've been very effective in getting rid of smallpox and getting rid of polio, reducing dramatically the numbers of measles, the numbers of rubella. See, that's because your immune system has been activated by a vaccine. So it responds thinking that it's been attacked and it hasn't really. So now your immune system is ready to go. It takes a while for the immune system to get geared up. When you first see the pathogen, if you were first exposed to a pathogen, your immune system will take probably about 2 weeks before it brings in the heavy hitters. And if you're still alive, you see, then you'll likely live.
Wow.
And so the idea is the vaccine is to get you through that initial part where the immune response is not nearly as powerful, so that you get to the powerful immune response. And now when you actually exposed to the pathogen, because the vaccine has already gotten you geared up, your immune system now responds so strongly that, for example, something as deadly as smallpox, you don't even know you're exposed to it because your immune system just wiped it out immediately. That's the purpose of a vaccine.
You asked if we could back up for a moment. Let me ask if we could back up, because the whole idea of an immune system from a biblical worldview, where God made Adam and Eve, all the creatures on the earth, in 6 days in the recent past, and obviously he made it all perfect, as we read in the scriptures. Yet it seemed with foresight, God gave to not only human beings, but to animals an immune system. And sure enough, Adam and Eve did rebel, and decay entered into the world, and disease and death. So this immune system that we have, you and I have talked, I think on a different show some years ago, about how powerful the immune system is And you even just said if you make it to a couple weeks and the immune system kicks in, you're almost certainly going to survive.
Yes. But
could you address that again? Just God gave us a system to protect us in a fallen world.
Yes. The immune system has serves several functions. It attacks cancer cells. It attacks parasites. It attacks viruses. It attacks bacteria. And the immune system keeps us alive every day. An example of that would be a bubble boy. You know, if you understand what I'm saying, someone who has to live in a very isolated situation because their immune system is so compromised. If they followed you or I around for a single day, they would die of the pathogens. They would die of the microbes they encountered, where we would think nothing of it. It's like, well, I didn't encounter anything. Well, yeah, you did. It's just your immune system wiped it out. It's really very rare that the immune system actually succumbs to the point that you get sick.
Wow.
And that's generally only because of the most deadly of pathogens that make you sick. So you encounter stuff all the time you never even think about.
Now, the immune system fighting off threats, this I know is a tangent, and it has to do with the ideas of the president of a sister organization of yours. You're with CRS, Creation Research Society, Director of Research. ICR down in Dallas, the Institute for Creation Research, Dr. Randy Galuza, he's got a model that he presents where, speaking of the immune system, is really just one part of this stunning microbial interface information system. And the more we are learning about how our bodies are designed to interface with the microbiome around us, it is truly stunning beyond measure what's happening in our lives, in fact, all living organisms in the world.
Yes, in fact, you have more bacteria cells on you and in you than you have human cells. So from a bacterial perspective, you're actually just a carrier for bacteria. You're not a human. You're just a bacterial carrier.
Yeah.
But what's fascinating in what you're mentioning is the bacterial cells and your cells communicate with each other. And that's been mind-blowing in the last 20 years to begin to recognize that they actually communicate with each other, and your bacterial cells in your body help your body regulate hormones, help your body regulate various factors going on, help your body's immune system. So, you know, who would have thought in that sense there'd be such this wonderful symbiosis between you and bacteria? And yet it definitely is. We've discovered more and more about it. Part of your health is very much tied to your own bacteria.
Wow. And one of the earliest glimpses into this was the digestive tract and how essential it is. We can't live without that microbiome within our intestines.
Right. That the microbiome in your intestinal is vital to your overall health. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And just a few days ago, I was speaking with somebody who's in the medical industry, and she brought up the appendix. And I pointed out that the appendix is a reservoir for when you get sick and your body is flushing out your intestines. And if you don't get replenished with those probiotics, you're not only just going to be sick, you're going to die. And she said, well, I thought the appendix had no function.
Wow.
And she was stunned to hear that it's a very important part of a functioning immune system.
That's kind of sad to think you can go through medical school and still think that the appendix has no function. That should have been expunged from their teaching decades ago.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah. And we know that the vestigial organs argument is almost like it's too big to fail. In fact, I had a professor of ophthalmology from the University of California on this show, and we were talking about what he believed, the evolution of the eye, and he's mentioning these parts of the eye, and he says they have no function, they're vestigial. So I turned to the world's leading source on the anatomy of the eye, like volume 23, and all these plica semilunaris and all nictitating membrane, all these things he says you no longer need, and they're describing these vital functions that they have. Once the evolutionary worldview gets into someone's mind that these things are not important or they have no function, it's hard to dislodge that fake news, that misinformation.
Fake news, yeah. And then people wonder why we creationists say that evolution has held medical science back by decades.
Oh, decades, including the junk DNA. All the DNA that we know is vital for life.
Yeah, and whole different topic. Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
And they didn't want to look at it for decades because it was their proof for Darwinism.
Yep.
So back to an RNA vaccine.
Yes.
Does an RNA vaccine have its own set of risks as compared to a DNA vaccine?
Possibly. Okay, the way an RNA vaccine works is really not unlike the way a DNA vaccine works. They both work very similar. And the reason that these are brand new is because this is 21st century technology. Let me go back for just a moment. The classic way of doing vaccines back when you and I were young, you know, way back in the dinosaur era. Okay.
Yeah.
If you were developing a vaccine against a virus, for example, you would typically inject the person with what we call an attenuated version of the virus. In other words, it's the pathogenic virus, but it's not functional.
Mm-hmm.
And it works very well. That makes an excellent vaccine. The problem is that sometimes it's not fully attenuated and you actually do get sick from it.
Right.
So the idea was, okay, let's make them a little safer. So let's just use certain parts of the virus that will the immune system respond to. And that works great because you're not going to get sick from that, but sometimes it doesn't give a very strong immune response.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea with an RNA and a DNA vaccine is you're actually injecting your body with the viral RNA or the viral DNA. Now, it's not going to make a new virus. It's just going to make a little bit of the virus that is going to cause the immune system to respond. So, for example, with the RNA viruses like the Pfizer virus and the Moderna virus, a piece of the viral RNA coated in a lipid shell, and the lipid shell attaches to your cells and soaks into your cell and releases that RNA inside your cell. Your cell now sees that RNA and starts making viral protein. That viral protein then is released by the cell. That's what your immune system responds to. And now you have the same thing as if you had been given a vaccine that was what we call a subunit vaccine. But it's much more effective than the subunit vaccine. The DNA vaccines work the same way, except instead of it being a piece of RNA, it's a piece of DNA. And the Johnson & Johnson and the Zivaca vaccines, they take a piece of DNA and they put it in an inactive virus. They put it in an adenovirus. It's a virus not going to cause you any problem, but it's going to attach and infect your cell. They inject the DNA into your cell. The DNA then is used to make an RNA, which is used to make a protein, which then the immune system responds to. So it's still the same idea of introducing something into your body that the immune system will respond to. But in this case, your body is making the protein that the immune system responds to, as opposed to injecting you with that protein to begin with.
Okay. So when you said that the virus, your cell is making copies of the virus, and then the cell releases that.
Well, it's making copies of a viral protein, not making copies of the virus. Big difference.
Okay, thank you.
Big difference, yes.
And then that goes out to where your white blood cells, we call them, the cells in your blood that are not the red blood cells with the hemoglobin, but they are the weapons of the immune system, and then that's identified and that's attacked, right, at that level.
Right. The job of the white blood cell, more correctly, more specifically called the macrophage, the job of them is to engulf this protein, and they literally have a chemistry lab inside them.
Wow.
And they analyze the protein. And then they do what's called macrophage presentation. In other words, they present the chemical structure of this protein to various lymphocyte cells. And these lymphocyte cells then start making antibodies specifically for that protein.
Wow.
Yeah, it's an enormously complicated process.
Yes.
When we say mind-blowing, that's still underselling how complicated your immune system is. It's just mind-blowing how complicated it is.
Right. Each part of it, let alone the entire system.
The idea is your immune system will now start making antibodies specifically for these viral proteins. So when you encounter the virus for real, you already have the antibodies ready to go to begin the initial attack. The way I would explain it to my microbiology classes is that this antibody attack is like the cruise missile hitting a window from 1,000 miles away. It is precise and it is deadly.
Wow. Wow.
And so that's what you're trying to get to instead of the hand grenades and the artillery shells, which do their job. And that's what you have with the initial immune response to keep things at bay, to keep the enemy from invading too deeply. You're hitting with hand grenades and, you know, and mortars and such. But what you're trying to do is you're trying to program your cruise missiles.
So,
and it takes a couple weeks.
Wow, the heavy artillery of the
heavy artillery,
system.
Exactly. The
right.
Precise, precision, deadly stuff.
Yeah. And a few years back, I think you made the statement that the immune system, when it is targeted, it cannot be defeated.
Correct.
That is just truly stunning.
Yeah, the problem is that at that point, if it brings in all its reserves, it will defeat the pathogen. There's no pathogen that can survive, but you won't survive either.
Wow.
As I say, you'll be the cleanest corpse in the morgue.
So the feedback systems are vital. And
evolutionists
have the hardest time explaining the origin of feedback systems, feedback loops, like we use in computer programming, but let alone in molecular biology. But Kevin, there are people who hear about RNA. Now, my wife and I have stated that we will not take these current vaccines because of either development or testing or even manufacturing with fetal cells, and because of the immorality, the wickedness of killing unborn children. But before we get to that, people hear about RNA or DNA from another species coming into their body, and they get very concerned about that. But earlier we said, I used the round number. When scientists try to estimate how many cells are in the human body, it's very difficult. And 10 trillion seems to be a number that some are gravitating around, but that would mean for bacteria and viruses, we have 100 trillion of those.
Well, probably more than that.
More than that, right.
Probably more than that. It's probably closer to a quadrillion.
Quadrillion of countless species for the bacteria and of countless innumerable types of viruses, which are minuscule in comparison. And I mentioned to a friend, imagine you're standing next to a mountain stream or you're on the beach and the waves are crashing and you got that beautiful mist on your face and all of the microbes that are coming in your eyes, your nose, your mouth, your ears, let alone any cuts you might have on your body. I mean, you're getting millions of bits of DNA and RNA in you every minute just standing there. And of course, then when we eat, but our digestive system does a pretty good job with digesting our food. But the idea that I might have RNA or DNA in me from another organism, that's an example of total confusion because that's what we are. That's what we have. We're loaded with RNA and DNA from other organisms.
Again, people don't recognize how surrounded they are by everything that's not human. The chair they're sitting on, the table in front of them, has over 700 billion viruses just within arm's reach of where they are. So they're surrounded by it. They have to recognize that the Creator has given our body the ability of surviving and working very well in this environment. And not to freak out and not to panic. that somehow everything, every little breath is going to kill him. That's not the way the Creator made it. That's not what's going on. They've lived this long. They're going to be fine. Yeah.
And then
you have this wonderful immune system. You have this wonderful balance in your body. And it's only just every once in a while that something happens that becomes life-threatening. But as we remember, I used the Bubble Boy analogy. What would kill the poor Bubble Boy, you don't even think anything about, because it's just part of your natural day-to-day process, because you're the wonderful design of your body.
Now, just maybe 2 months ago, we had Dr. John Sanford on the show. I know, you know, he's a world-renowned geneticist, and talking about the decay, the breakdown of the genome. And so our bodies are not functioning as well as they would have functioned even just a couple thousand years ago, let alone go back to the time of the creation in the Garden of Eden. All the organisms in the world are gradually breaking down through genetic decay, so that we are struggling with not only our own lessening ability to respond, but there are increasing number of organisms that were beneficial that are becoming deleterious. They're becoming pathogens.
Right.
Where
all
they were
part
not.
Of the fallen, all part of the fallen world. Adam and Eve would probably consider us pretty physically puny.
Right.
By comparison. Yeah. But it's all part of the fallen world.
Yes.
And that's why in Romans, Paul says that the creation groans essentially under the curse. You know, it's just because of all of this happening. And SARS-CoV-2 is just the next one in line. There'll be another one, and there'll be another one, and there'll be another one. That's just all human history has dealt with this. And we're just, as you say, it's becoming more frequent now because of the declining overall state, if you will, of the world we live in.
Yes. Now, as to the vaccines that are out, what I'd like to do, because the information changes pretty frequently, I'd like to put on our website the latest information on which vaccines are either manufactured with fetal tissue, which is so immoral, or even those that were created through testing on tissues derived from these unborn children who were aborted. The fetal cell lines that are used are extremely well known. In fact, the day that these babies were killed, and some of the more popular lines came from Europe, but Johnson & Johnson, this is not an exaggeration. This is utterly documented in the literature. They're using cell lines that came not just from a baby that was aborted about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, but literally from the baby's eye, from the baby's eyeball. That's where they're getting those fetal cells. Again, I'll link to this. It's all so well documented. It's actually not disputed by the pharmaceutical industry. But then there are other vaccines like Pfizer and Moderna that say we are not manufacturing our vaccine using fetal tissue cells, but we did develop them in testing. And even for Cheryl and I, that's too proximate. That's too close. So personally, we won't take those. Now, there was a statement released just this past week from Moderna saying that, and they responded to a query from North Dakota saying that, you know, while they did use fetal tissue in developing their COVID vaccine, they're not using it any longer to test their lot testing, they call it lot testing. They're not using it in the vaccine manufacturing. And so, okay, fine. There's a professor at North Dakota State University in their Department of Public Health, Dr. Paul Carson. And he says, well, that's important to know, but it doesn't change the fact that fetal cell lines were used in their original experiments by Moderna to develop their vaccine. And he said it's unethical and it's problematic. So that's something, Kevin, I don't know if you have anything to add to that, but I'll put on our website the latest information about which vaccines have used fetal tissue in which ways.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate situation we find ourselves in this fallen world, and that is that these cell lines have been so used for so long, they're so well studied, that unfortunately it may not even be feasible to be able to talk these pharmaceutical companies into not using them, because it would cost them so much money to switch over to a different cell line that's not as well known, that's not as well studied. And so, unfortunately, when it comes to growing viruses, these fetal cell lines are really all they use for the most part, simply because of the immorality of humans, if you will, in even thinking about the consequence of where that fetal cell line came from.
Right. Now, that, to them, it's not even a consideration.
Exactly.
But, you know, when we look back in history, though, if we think about how slavery was part of the economic engine of a number of countries in the world, and it was really unthinkable to most people who were against slavery, it was unthinkable to imagine that slavery could be ended. But then it was. And so we always need to advocate for what is good and what is right. And I'll tell you what, when you have entire, for example, Roman Catholic dioceses who are telling their people, don't take the Johnson & Johnson vaccine because it's using fetal cells from this baby's eyeball, literally, in the vaccine, don't take it. I think that's admirable. And so that's the position we're taking. But I also would like to say this, Kevin, that it's real easy to say, oh, let's boycott, say, PayPal because they give money to Planned Parenthood, right? We hear that now and then.
Yes.
Let me just give a little list here I put together personally. So does Verizon, T-Mobile, United Airlines, Adobe, American Express, Bank of America, Bath & Body Works, Ben & Jerry's, right? And it goes on, Boeing,
right,
and Clorox, and Converse, and Dockers, and Energizer, and Expedia, and ExxonMobil, and Fannie Mae, and Groupon, and Intuit, like Quicken, and Mint, and QuickBooks, Johnson & Johnson. We're talking Tylenol, and Motrin, and Zyrtec, and Benadryl, and all. It goes on and on.
Yeah.
And Levi Strauss, and Liberty Mutual, and there I'm only up to the L's, right? It's horrific, as the Bible says. The Apostle Paul said you'd have to go out of the world not to interact with wickedness.
Yes,
but
exactly.
You never commit wickedness and you don't advocate wickedness. But I do think it is important to recognize that if you go into a Walmart, they sell the abortion pill at Walmart. So literally our dollars are being used not just to support a baby that was killed 30 years ago, but a baby that's going to be killed tomorrow.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point. As in 1 Corinthians, the Apostle Paul was talking about to put out of your community these certain sins, the people engaging in these things, but yet you still have to interact with a sinful world and you still have to live within that sinful world. Otherwise, you got to leave the world.
Right.
And so I think it really comes kind of back to each believer has to stand before God and work between them and God exactly what is it that I'm going to say is where I'm going to draw the line of this is something I can't interact with. This is something that is soiling me too much, if you will, because we recognize we can't completely eliminate it because we're not in the world anymore. Yeah.
Right. In fact, you know what I'll do on today's show summary? At the end of the show summary, I'm going to post this whole list of all the businesses we would have to boycott if we said that we will not interact with organizations that either support the killing of unborn children. Kevin, Pepsi, for years, they were doing taste test research on taste buds that they were growing from a baby's tongue that had been aborted.
Yeah.
And Pepsi, we have the letter from them where we were part of the boycott against Pepsi for doing this. And they publicly said, not only are they stopping, they'll never do it again.
Well, there you go.
So,
sometimes you win one, yes.
Yeah, sometimes, right? So, okay, so Kevin, last thing, we've taken so much of your time. How about the COVID itself? I call it the COVID, you know?
Yes.
The numbers of people who, they call them cases, people, how many cases we have, how many deaths we have. It seems that there's been a lot of conflation going on, and it's very difficult to really get accurate numbers.
Yes, unfortunately. First off, there is a virus. First off, we need to make it very clear that coronaviruses are very common. There's many, many, many different strains of coronaviruses. There's going to be new strains of coronaviruses all the time. Most coronaviruses aren't really that dangerous to humans, but every once in a while, one comes along that is, and this happens to be one that is. Now, having said that, we have to recognize, okay, just what is the situation? How many people are getting sick? How many people have died? And unfortunately, the answer is we don't really know, because I have never, and I think, Bob, you'd probably say the same thing, in all the decades we've been alive, we've never seen a virus so politicized.
Mm-hmm.
Just unbelievably politicized. And
yeah,
because
right.
of that, unfortunately, there's been a massive amount of conflation going on. And what I mean by that is that the 2020 numbers for cases and deaths of influenza are virtually non-existent.
The normal flu, the normal seasonal flu have plummeted. They've plummeted.
Exactly. 2020 was the safest year ever for the flu. Well, it wasn't really. It's just that they were diagnosed as COVID, obviously. But it not only is just the flu, it's also cancer, diabetes, heart disease, other factors that lead to health problems that kill people. All of those, by the CDC's own numbers, are way down.
Wow, so you mean we almost cured cancer in 2020?
We almost cured cancer in 2020. Almost cured diabetes. Almost cured heart disease. Exactly. By the CDC's own numbers, 2020 was the healthiest year we've probably ever had. But instead, everybody's dying of COVID. And so what that tells us, obviously, is that if you had any way related to COVID, when you were sick or when you died, it was suddenly categorized as COVID-related, and that's how it became designated. So you didn't die of cancer, you died of COVID. You didn't die of heart disease, you died of COVID. You didn't die of shark attack. If you had COVID at the same time, you died of COVID, you know, so it became that silly. So the problem is the numbers that we see reported of number of cases, number of deaths, those are obviously highly conflated. Clearly, it's case that not that many people have died of COVID, not that many people have actually had a serious case of COVID.
Not that many as compared to the numbers that
to the numbers that are being
the media and the CDC
about.
Report.
Yes.
Right, exactly. Right. And as soon as Donald Trump left office, the CDC, the federal government, they said, you know, we're counting too many tests as positive. We're inflating the results. So they actually changed their standards to bring it more in line to something closer to reasonable. And the New York Times reported that 90% of people testing positive have hardly no virus at all and seem to be not infectious. So, politicized, like HIV was politicized, but 100 times more.
But 100 times more, exactly. And yes, that itself proves the politicalization of all of this. When the moment that their political position, if you will, has panned out, you know, their political objective has occurred, suddenly now it's okay to admit that, oh, guess what? We probably haven't been counting these correctly. The head health official here in Arizona, not a Trump supporter in any way, in January finally admitted, well, you know, when you take everything into account, there's probably nothing anybody could have done to actually prevent the pandemic as it's come about.
Right.
Now, they weren't saying that prior to the election. They weren't saying that prior to anything. So now when it's safe to admit it because we've achieved our political objective, now we're going to admit we've way overplayed this. We've made it way too dramatic. We have overplayed the numbers. We have created a scare that wasn't necessary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Kevin, thank you so much. It is such a joy to talk to you, not only to get the science, but also from the perspective of God who made us and made us in such a way that we are able to survive, generally speaking. And in fact, we filled the earth, as he told us to do, with human beings. And then it's up to us now to share the gospel so that many would come to the Lord in faith and inherit eternal life as Jesus promised.
Yes.
So
absolutely.
So thank you for your life's work, Kevin. It's really humbling to be able to call you and get you on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
You're very welcome. We're going to link to the work of the Creation Research Society and the Van Andel Research Center in Glendale, Arizona. This is Bob Benyart for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.